Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, this has been quite a week. When I talk about things that have happened, but the first thing I want to talk about today, I want to talk about William O'Neill, Judas, the Black Messiah. And the reason why this movie is so important, it told the story of what I have been talking about for years and years and years. See, William O'Neill came out. He was from Maywood, Illinois, and I'm a Chicago boy myself. I did get a chance to meet Fred Hampton Sr. Matter of fact, he came to my mother's house. I think he was 17, because I think I was 17. I don't know where I was, 16, 17, or even 18. I don't remember which. One of my best friends, Marcello Lacey, he was from Maywood also, and he brought him to meet me. Because he thought that even then that I was a mover and a shaker. And he brought me in. We sat on my mother's front porch. And we just talked, you know, kids talk. We was too young to know anything. I don't think we was athletes at that time. But we just did things. But here's what's important. What's going on, what happened with William O'Neill, or they call him Bill in the movie, was that he had infiltrated the Black Panther Party. And by him infiltrating the Black Panther Party, he got a chance to give the pigs information in reference to what's going on in our community. And the reason why it's so important, Chicago had a guy named Bowlegs. He ran a hit organization. He must have had about 20, 25 members. Women, too. He had women's, as hit women's, too. And what you would do, you would call him up on the phone. You would call him up on the phone, Bowlegs, and they have a regular secretary who would take the information down and give you a price, how much they would charge to kill a person. And this went on for years. This didn't just end in 2-3 years. This was probably a five to eight year adventure. And they would kill people, and they would charge you for doing it. It was infiltrated by the FBI. They sent people to work for Bowlegs, and what Bowlegs would do, he'll send these guys out, and they will commit the murder. That's why they never went to prison. The only person who went to prison was Bowlegs. He's the only one who went to prison. He's in prison right now, serving life, possibly parole. And the guys that were performing the murders were FBI agents, or informers, as they call it. I don't think they classify them as agents. But this is what they did. Also, like all the gangs, the Blackstone Rangers, the Black Gangster Disciples, all of them, you had agents inside those places actually pulling the trigger. That's why a lot of times these murders don't get solved. You see, a lot of times people say, oh, no, they wouldn't do no stuff like that. They would do anything. See, that's why Judas, the Black Messiah, is important. You get the opportunity to understand that these people would do anything. They would do anything. They don't care about your life. They don't care about my life. Only thing they care about is destroying the Black community, and they'll do it any way they can. They will kill anybody. Everybody is expendable. That's right. Every single person is expendable. And I know it's hard for you to believe. Years ago, I knew about this guy, Bowlegs. I knew what he was doing. I knew that he was out here just like a regular job. This was a job to him. You would call up, talk to a secretary, and they'll call you back or give you a price for actually killing somebody. Infiltrated by the FBI and the Chicago Police Department. And they are the ones who actually carried out the murder. I don't know whether Boley had committed any murders. I don't know. I have no idea what Boley did. But Boley actually was the leader. And he made a lot of money because a lot of people were getting shot up. At one period of time, people was getting killed left and right in Chicago. If you wanted your husband killed, you call up Boley. You wanted your wife killed, you call up Boley. That's what they, even some of the gangs was going to Boley and get them to kill people. You can look up Boley on the internet. Matter of fact, he's in federal prison right now. But my point is this. Judas, the Black Messiah, set the table for this. He is the one who actually set the pattern. That movie brought tears to my eyes. Just to know. Well, I kind of like lived the story myself because it was during my time, and I'm a Chicago West Side guy. So I kind of like lived it. But I'm telling people this. Don't underestimate this government. This is my message for each and every one of you guys. Do not underestimate this government. This government will do anything. Every single person in the Black community and even in the white community are expendable. They don't care nothing about you. They don't care nothing about me. They don't care nothing about your children. They have their own agenda. And we got to wise up. That's why we cannot allow these people to continue to do this. See, we got our own Judas right here in Benton Harbor. The mayor here, he's a Judas. He's a Judas, straight up Judas. Bill O'Neill or William O'Neill, that's him. He's a Muslim brother, but he lost all that, you know. And he's a liar, which is even worse. He's a liar. He would lie. He would do anything. And here's the thing. When you lie, if you lie, you're killed. You see? But they said, well, no, that's too different. No, because this is the thing. We take money from people to do things to destroy families. That's what's happening here in the city of Benton Harbor. They're destroying families here. Actually destroying families, you see. The water crisis. This mayor wouldn't even tell people that the water was bad. They knew the water was bad. They knew the water was undrinkable. But they refused to tell people that the water was bad. They didn't want nobody to know that the water was bad. But we exposed them. We went out and did it ourselves. Because most Black folks don't have the ingenuity to take this thing to a different level. But we did it. Which is crucial. This is so important that we stand up for each other. And anytime you find people who are materialistic, they can be bought and sold. I don't care who they are. When you become materialistic, you can be bought because you always want more. You're never satisfied. I don't care what it is. You're never satisfied. If you have a Buick, You want a Cadillac. If you got a Cadillac, you want a Lexus. If you got a Lexus, you want a Mercedes-Benz. You got a Mercedes-Benz, you want a Rolls-Royce. You always, when you become materialistic, you're never, never satisfied. If you got yourself a three-bedroom home, you want a four-bedroom home. You got yourself a four-bedroom home, you want a five-bedroom home. This is the mentality. This is not everybody. This is the people who are materialistic. When you become materialistic, you will do anything. Because that it's all in your blood now. But this is what I'm talking about, the Judas, the Black Messiah. That is a powerful movie. And those of you who have not had the opportunity to see it, go see it. It's gigantic. It tells the story, but you got to go deeper than what you're watching. You got to dig into the movie. Dig in. What they're showing you is wonderful, but you got to dig into the movie, because everything you need to know about the society, especially if you're an activist, you know, if you're an activist, you need to watch that movie, because you will learn in how they operate. And that is exactly how they operate. My friend Lee comes on here, and he talk about how they set him up. And they did. They did, because I remember this. When I was in prison, there was a guy who came to me and told me, he said, Reverend, they got something in Detroit, and the way they operate, people murders that they didn't do. He said, and then they bring in an informer as a witness. He may have even committed the crime, and they charge you with the murder, and you end up going to prison for the rest of your life. This is how they operate. I don't know whether they still, I think it was on the 11th floor or something at Detroit Police Department headquarters. But this is what they was doing. But they don't just do that in Detroit. They do it all over the country. Anywhere black folks live, anywhere, this is what they do. We're expendable. We don't have the resources to fight these evil, wicked people. We don't have them, but we have the manpower. If we come together and stand up against these people, we can beat them. We can beat them. They can be beat, but we can't do it as individuals. It has to be done in a group. When I took on the juvenile lifers back in 2004, what was important about it, I really didn't know what to do. I'm going to be honest with you. But when I got a call from prison from this guy, he was a juvenile lifer, and he told me, he said, well, look, we got to make some noise. And he asked me to go beyond the call of duty to help him and get this thing exposed out here in the world. And I decided I would do it because it was a challenge. And we were successful. I brought in the ACLU, and we went to work. And the thing that was so important, we even got a chance to hear the case in the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, which was really gigantic. But I'm going to bring in someone today. Her name is J-Love. Wow, she's a person who stood up. It's that mother's love, you know. To see, it's something special about a mother's love, you know. You know, when you lose your mother, you know, it takes a piece out of you, you know. I tell you, this young lady, she'd be on the Sam Riddle show, and she definitely won my heart, because I tell you, she's a strong fighter. She's a person willing to go beyond the call of duty. And now that her son is home, she continues to fight this battle. And I tell you this, that is something that we all need to get into. We all need to talk about. If your neighbor is in trouble, your neighbor's son is in trouble, you're in trouble too. If a family member's son is in trouble, you're in trouble too. We have to change our mentality. We're so busy in this world doing nothing that we're the busiest people in the world. And we're the busiest people in the world that's doing exactly nothing. And that's why they got us in this compromising position today. Because we allow them. We always got to do something. We got to watch out. I got to watch my program tonight. I got to do this. Always got to do something. It doesn't mean nothing. Let me bring in my good friend, J-Love, are you there? Talk to me.
Hi, Reverend Pinkney. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my honor, J Love, to have you on the show today. You know, and we got a full house, and before the week's over, maybe 50,000-60,000 people are gonna hear what you got to say today. So I know that, you know, the fight that you put up was gigantic. You know, I just wish that people here would do the same thing that you did, because one of the things they do here, they expect me to do the fighting for them while they sit at home and watch their programs. This is how they think. But you put boots on the ground and you went and did what you had to do. And I'm very, very proud of you. I tell you this, J Love. And you know that name, J Love, that's, do you see the connection there though? J Love. That's a real warrior name, you know what I'm saying? I love it.
Yes.
I love it, girl. But listen, that's enough of me talking. Let me hear what you got to say. Tell me how all this started with you. Let's talk up a little bit about your son. And let's make it happen. I'm gonna give you the flow. You just run with it until you get tired.
Okay. So yes, my son Gerard was wrongfully convicted of a crime he didn't do. So this happened right around the time that my mother just had passed, maybe a few weeks. And I get a call from my son, and he's been arrested in Detroit. So the journey continued. He said, "Mom, I didn't do this." So I said, "Okay." So from the beginning, you know, he have always, you know, claimed his innocence, and still to the day, he wants to clear his name. And so that birthed the movement, the Justice for Gerard movement, and we've been fighting ever since. He just came home in January. 20th. So he's been at home a little over a month now, and that's a process as well. But Reverend Pinckney, when I tell you there is an epidemic of going on a wrongful conviction, it's terrible. I met many mothers on this journey that their kids or their sons or daughters have been wrongfully convicted. Some are murders. And I was listening to you talking about that in the beginning about a murder. Mm-hmm. So we have to stand up. We can't, you know, be so reactive. We have to be proactive. You know, we have gotten so complacent, thinking it's somebody else. But like you said, if it happens to me, it's happening to you. Yeah. It might have not reached you yet, but it's happening to you. So we have to stand together, you know. I organized two rallies in the city of Detroit. Well, one in the city in Detroit and one in the city of Redford, because I felt like, you know, when we were in the trial, most of the people who was on the jury were from the suburbs, the surrounding suburbs of Wayne County. So I think I talked about this on the show on Friday, and when we talking to each other, we're pretty much preaching to the choir, and we do need to take responsibility of being on juries. But the people who come to the jury to volunteer to be on the jury, you have to educate them as well, because they get that information off the TV and the local news and all that stuff. So what they've been talking about, confirmative biases, people form biases from listening to all this stuff. So first, as soon as they see a young black man, automatically they think they're guilty. My son has been suffering for over 15 years with severe Crohn's disease, Pinckney.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He has to take an infusion every 4 weeks. So to maintain his health. Now, some people have Crohn's disease and they can work and they can do all kinds of stuff, but my son has never been able to live that type of life. So so even when he got into, when he was housed in Jackson Prison, I had to fight there too to advocate for his health care. They lost his medical records, all kinds of stuff Brother Pinckney, because this medicine is expensive, and they'll do anything not to pay the bill from this medicine. So, you know, we had to advocate for his health care. We had to advocate for everything, you know. By the time he got an infusion in there, he had lost, like, almost 30 pounds.
Wow.
So we have to, as a community, when you hear someone say, hey, I didn't do it, or, you know, this wasn't me, 9 times out of 10, they're telling the truth.
Yeah.
So, you know, we know there are people who do stuff. We see it every day. But we're talking about innocent people that haven't did anything, going to prison for crimes they didn't do. And as you notice, every other week you see somebody being exonerated, 10 years, 20 years, 30, 40 years, for crimes they didn't do. And what happens? There's no apology. There's no nothing. There's no responsibility. There are
right. There's really no remedy to a person being wrongly convicted in the state of Michigan. There's no remedy for it. And that's one of the things that I'm fighting for right now. You know, when the prosecutor sending you to prison and stuff like that, you just sent to prison. You know, this is what they're trying to do right now. There is states that actually pays for it. When a person is sent to prison wrongly convicted. But here in the state of Michigan, the answer is no.
Right, you have to even fight for that in Michigan. It's not automatic. If you've been in jail for 15, 20 years, it should be, and it said, oh, we made a mistake, it was wrongful. It should be automatic. You shouldn't even have to step into another courtroom. So there is so much work that we have to do out here. And so I'm using my platform every Friday on the Justice for Gerard Movement page, and to talk about wrongful convictions, because we need to educate ourselves on how this happens. It can happen to anybody. You don't have to be some random person. You could be driving down the street. You don't have to be standing in front of a liquor store. You could be coming out your door. I mean, Reverend Pinckney, this can happen to anyone at any time. So on Fridays, it's called Turning a Moment into a Movement. And we come on, myself and a few other people, Attorney Hugo Mack and Trisha Dubworth and a few other strong advocates, and we discuss how wrongful convictions happen. What do they look like? You know, I did 1 week on shaking baby syndrome. You should have seen my phone. So many mothers across Michigan calling about the shaking back, how they lost their kids.
Yeah.
So we can't just sit back and twiddle our thumbs and wait till it happened to us. We have to say something now, because if we don't do something, guess what? Nothing's going to change. We're going to keep, and then one day it might be you.
That's right.
And they're going to be looking for you, Reverend Pinckney. Are they going to be looking for me, or are they going to be looking for somebody else?
Right. You know, down here, they did what they called a feasibility report. And the feasibility report was to discover how people react to certain things. And and what happened here was that they, like these all-white juries, like here in Barron County, it's always an all-white jury. I've been on trial 3 times, and each time it's always been an all-white jury. Four times. So one time I had 2 blacks on there, and it turned out to be a hung jury. And when any time we had an all-white jury, it was always a conviction, even with no evidence. You don't even have to have evidence. And the thing is, you know, people say, I had this news lady from Channel 57 out here, and she went through the whole trial, and she knew, you know, she filmed the whole trial. And at the end of the day, when she said, when they found me guilty, she cried like a baby. She came to my house and sat at my house. And matter of fact, she left News 57. But like I told her, you know, this is life. This is what we go through because we're so separated. You know, separation caused this. They know that most of the time people only care about themselves. They don't care about the neighbor. Care about the person down the street. They don't care about the person that lives behind them. Only thing, well, it don't affect me. You know, or they will say something like this: oh, they got Reverend Pinckney. Then somebody said, oh, we should have done something. Yeah, you should have done something, but it's too late now. You see
right.
what I'm saying?
And that's when we had the conversation mm-hmm. about the Judas within, because we betray
yeah.
ourselves. We don't
Absolutely.
Even have to wait for somebody else to come and betray us. We betray mm-hmm. ourselves. We don't speak up when we should. We don't take any action. We don't call you a simple calling your senator to encourage him to vote for the George Ford bill. You know, these
mm-hmm.
are the things that we can do. You don't have to be out here, you know, everybody is not going to stand up and protest and walk down the street. But you can pick up the phone. You can write a letter. So
that's right.
When we're talking about the Judases, we are our own Judas.
Mm-hmm.
So until we recognize that nothing is going to change unless you stand up,
mm-hmm.
unless you speak out. You know, you're going to still get the same result. So that's why when my son said, Mom, I didn't do this. And Reverend Pinckney, like you said, there wasn't no evidence. It was a video
mm-hmm.
of a man with the back of the head. But because my son sent a description, a tall, thin built, braids, how many people is that in Michigan?
Huh.
He
sent
a description.
About hundreds
they
and
ran
hundreds
with
and hundreds.
It.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And they were
absolute.
It.
Mm-hmm. And you
so
know what? Have,
uh-huh.
This is something that Jay Love, that y'all should talk about too. When you talk about the jury, you see,
mm-hmm.
when you go to trial, you got a 99.9% chance of being convicted, even without
yeah.
any evidence. And the prosecutor
yeah.
told when I was on trial, even though they know they didn't have no jury, they didn't even have a witness. This is how bad it was. But he told him, he
mm-hmm.
said, you can still find him guilty. And then,
oh,
then
yeah.
the judge said, whatever y'all say is going to be final. And I was shocked, you know, to hear something. My attorney, even though at that time he was riding, you know, with him. He's my friend, but his son was in trouble. So he had to choose between me and his son and who he thinks he's going to choose, because his son was
right.
in jeopardy. You see, but
right,
I didn't fear. I knew that, you know, whatever it was, it wouldn't be the death penalty. That's the thing. But Jay Love, when you talk about these juries, because it's crucial. Black folks do everything they can not to be on a jury until it's their
yes,
their
right,
husband.
It's
their
right.
Then they want to get
right.
on or want people to stay on. But they don't do it, Jay Love. They don't do it. See, everything
it
gotta be about you. If it ain't about you, you're not gonna get involved.
Right. Reverend Pinckney, I sat up there and watched these black people make so many excuses to get off that
mm-hmm.
jury. And
yeah.
When it was left, it was all white. The blackest city
all
in Michigan.
All white folks.
And you have an all white jury. That's
yeah.
our fault. That's weird.
Yeah.
Reverend Pink, that's the Judases. You're going to run
yeah.
away. You're going to betray your own people just so you cannot be involved. Until it happens to you, you're going to be wishing that you had your peers in there. So
that's
you
right.
have to, people have to go to jury duty. When it comes, and it's your turn, go. Pay attention, because you could be saving somebody's life.
Absolutely.
These people don't care whether you did it or not. You're just another face. And then they automatically think, well, if he didn't do that, they did something.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We have to show up to jury duty. That is a big one, Reverend Pinckney.
Mm-hmm. But we don't. You know, I remember my wife was called for jury duty. Matter of fact, she's been called a lot, but she never get the opportunity to be on the jury because her last name is Pinckney. So, you know, that's kind of like, but she want to be on there. See, that's the difference. And when you go there, you see so many white folks who want to be on the jury, but you see black
yes.
folks who don't want to be on the jury. You see? So
right.
it's easy. It's easy to get rid of
and
black
they know
folks.
This.
Right. Because they don't want to be on
that.
No way. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
They know
but
you're not
you know,
going to show up. That's
yeah,
why they
yeah,
want
but,
you to take a plea.
Yeah, and that's
they're,
why,
they're,
you know, should, J-Love, one of the things that you know, we should be talking about more is talking about black folks on these juries, you know. And
yes.
I don't want to hear these people crying we had another all white group jury. But when you had the opportunity to be on, you immediately opt out because it wasn't you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. We got to do more than just go vote.
Yeah.
It's more than just go vote. You got to be on jury duty. You need to go to your meetings, your neighborhood meetings, your city council meetings. You got to be more active. This is how you don't pay attention, and they got all kinds of laws to criminalize you as soon as you walk out the door. So you have to pay attention. You have to speak up. They want you to be complacent. That's why they make it so hard. But you have to say no.
That's right. And here's another thing that is crucial. With your son having what's the Crohn's? Is that the Crohn's disease you're talking about? Tell me a little bit about that. I don't have a whole lot of knowledge about it. Help me.
Okay, so he has Crohn's disease. Is an autoimmune disease that affects your gut. And so his intestines, when it's bad, is really inflamed and swollen. He can't barely walk, Reverend Pinky. I know he called me one day. I hadn't spoke to him for a week. And when he called, I was nervous, like something must be going on. When he called, he said, "Mom, I don't want to die in here. I'm so sick, I can barely walk." So it affects people. Some people have it mildly, but he has had it really bad since he was a teenager. It's the pain of your stomach hurting so bad, Reverend Pinkney. It makes you you don't have a regular stool like everybody else. It just runs like water. You can't eat certain foods, and guess what makes it triggers it? Stress. Makes it even worse. So can you imagine being in Jackson, Michigan, in prison, innocent, with Crohn's disease? You stressed every day.
Absolutely.
Every day is a stressful day. So I try to talk about it so much because I want people to understand, like, I'm not going to stop talking about it. Because we have to make it like almost look at yourself. What if this happened to you? What would you want somebody to do? You would want somebody out here to speak for you or say something. So that's why I'm not going to stop. I met too many mothers, mothers who hadn't even told their stories, who have been dealing with it for years, 5, 10 years. One of the ladies, her son just came home after 16 years. He went to prison at 19 for something he didn't do.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
We have
to. You know, that's like that.
We just got to pay attention to each other.
J-Love, here's something that I would do with these ladies, all these ladies that have long conviction within their family. I would start court watching. That is a tool, and then that way you could sit in that courtroom and listen to what the judge saying and get a feel. I've been court watching since 1999, and I learned how actually really to beat the system for other people, but by me being a Pinkney. It's they got it rigged to make sure we don't win regardless of what happened. Is we already know it. But I would suggest to you one of the tools that I would start using with all these ladies, and also you also putting these ladies to work. And to me, talking is fine, but action means a whole lot more. And I think that if you decided that, we're gonna court watch, and you don't have to court watch every day. You can find a case and follow that case. Each lady follow a case, and then y'all sit down and compare notes at the end, and that way y'all have an idea exactly what's going on and how to defeat these people. Because you're never going to learn how to defeat this enemy, this monster, until you come together and deal with I got this guy named Lee from Detroit, the one who they're trying to frame him in federal court, and saying that that's another case 99.9% chance you got to be convicted, But he was telling the story about all the informers. I'm going to see, can I get him on sometime today so he can talk a little bit about it. And I want you, you know, just listen to what he got to say, because what he's saying, most people would not understand it, because they'd be saying, oh, no, that'll never happen. They don't do stuff like that. Anytime you say something that they won't do, they will do. What people need to know. When they say that they won't do something, that actually means that they will do it. And they would,
why they do it, Reverend Peekley, because they don't have to be accountable.
No
system, and that's what people have to understand. There's nothing to make them accountable. There's qualified immunity that keeps them from getting in trouble. For the prosecutors, there's absolute immunity that keeps them from getting in trouble. So when you don't have no accountability, you can do whatever you want to when you're trying to build a career. These people are using you to build their career.
There you go. You said the right word. They're using you, and then they can go home. I just don't see how they can go home and sleep. See, that's my problem. Knowing that you're doing something that's wrong, that you're destroying a person's life, and for reason unknown, you feel it's okay? Come on.
Right. I felt like that, too. I said, how could somebody put somebody they know didn't do it in prison? And then I realized they don't care. They've been desensitized. They don't care, Reverend Pinkney. They don't care about you. He's just another person. Like I said earlier, he did something. So he'll be all right. You know, that's what their whole mindset is. And so we have to change our mindset, and we got to be more active. People, you know, when I was posting about it, Reverend Pinkney, everybody was like, you got to pray. I'm praying. But you got to have action with the prayer.
That's right. And you know, when people say that, most of the time they really don't want to help. That's what it is. That's the expression I get. When you say, well, let's pray about it. Well, you can pray about it, but let's get out here and put the boots on the ground. Let's go do that after we get to praying.
Right.
You know, because faith without work is dead. And I'm hoping that you know that. And everybody who says, yeah, let's pray, then let's get out here and do something. Let's go picket tomorrow. Let's go court watch tomorrow. Let's go do this tomorrow.
Right.
Let's make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to do. And I think that's where we take it to a whole different level, J-Love. And it's crucial, you know, that. But I like that group you got. I like it. And I think that I see this as an opportunity where you can, you know, take it to a whole different level and start court watching. And when you start court watching, that you know, when they see y'all face, when they see my face when I go over here to Barron County Courthouse, they get nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them to get nervous. I want them to be scared. I want them to be intimidated. You know, when I walk in that courthouse, all eyes are on me. All. You know, even if they're upstairs in their office, they have the cameras. They're watching what I'm doing, who I'm talking to. But I don't really care, because they don't intimidate me. They don't scare me.
Right.
So Reverend
Pinkney, when we're talking about wrongful conviction, we're talking about 5 to 10% of people incarcerated. That's what the data says, that they're wrongfully convicted. So in Michigan, if there are over 40,000 people in prison, that's between 2,000 to 4,000 is wrongfully convicted.
Absolutely.
It might be more than that, depending on what county you live in. So this is, why should 2,000 to 4,000 people just be in prison for things they didn't do? We have to, you know, we want a system that works for us. So when they talking about, you know, people get upset when people say defund the police or all that stuff. Well, we need some action. We need something more than reform. We have to change the system. And changing the system means that we as the people are going to have to get out here and do some work. You just sat down too long. It's time to do some work. This is for my grandbabies and they babies, you know.
That's right.
We might not see it on our watch, but we can put it in action so it can happen for our future generation.
And let me say this, you know, once they realize that black folks is not these folks that are so intimidated by law enforcement, by these judges and prosecutors, it'll change then. You see,
right.
One thing one thing about a white person, they believe every single thing that the prosecutors say. I don't care what in their eyesight, they don't know that. But by court watching, you know that these police officers are lying. See, that's how I learned.
Mm-hmm.
Police officers, and you know, and I say, why? Well, see, it used to shock me, but it don't shock me no more. It don't, you know, what they did, because I got the experience of court watching and watching them and watching all of them, and I know that they're evil. Over 99.9% of them are evil and wicked. You know, there's very few who's going to stand up and do what's right, especially for a black person.
Right.
So that,
and we have
that,
to stop thinking that, and we're going to have to stop thinking that they're our friends.
Yeah.
And even the black ones, Rem Peek, we're going to have to put them out there too. Even some of them.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
They think they're one of them. Yeah. It's the mindset of the criminal justice system. He's talking, going back to the Judases, but, you know, even them, Rem Peek, we have to just understand that, you know, once you get into this system, you can't trust nobody. You gotta fight,
And the thing is that it just so much, wow. But listen, I gotta let you go. But you got two minutes to talk about whatever your heart desire. Give out your website and everything. Let people know about your show. And hey, J Love, it's going down. That's all I can tell you.
All right. So thank you again for having me on. I want your listeners to join me on the Justice for Gerard, G-E-R-A-R-D, movement page on Facebook. We're also on YouTube. You could go on YouTube and watch the videos, the same name, Justice for Gerard. We're on all the social media platforms to sign his petition. Go on change.org/justice4. Gerard, G-E-R-A-R-D. You can hear the story and you can find out some of the other things that we've been doing. And on Friday at 6 p.m., join us again. We're speaking on wrongful convictions and how they happen. We're going through every single cause of how a wrongful conviction can happen. Join us. It's called Turning a Moment into a Movement. It comes on at 6 p.m. on the Justice for Gerard page. Again, that's spelled with a G-E-R-A-R-D. Come on there. And again, Justice for Gerard movement page on YouTube. You can watch the video live there as well if you're not on Facebook. So thank
all
you,
right.
Rodney.
Listen, we'll talk soon. You take care of yourself. Tell Sam I said keep his nose clean. To let him know, tell him I said keep his nose clean. Tell him I'm watching him. All right now. Take care, J-Love.
Okay.
All right. You're welcome. That was J Love from Detroit, Michigan. And now I got to bring in the one and only, the baby girl of Marcina, the one and only. This is Marcina Jr. we talking to today. Marcina,
hi,
talk to me.
Hi, Reverend Pinkney. Hi,
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Okay, I want to piggyback on what you were talking about with the Judas and Messiah.
Uh-huh.
One like-minded individual said, the prevention of the rise of the Black Messiah by Judas lies in the mindset of a revolutionary. The mindset and actions of the revolutionary is enough to move a whole nation out of its slumber to free their minds from mental slavery. Okay.
That's what I'm talking about, girl. And I like that, you know. And, you know, it's amazing. That's something that your mom would say also. But that's a true statement. You see, we're surrounded by Judas. That's why we don't get what we need. We can't get justice inside the courthouse. We can't even get justice inside with these elected officials, black elected officials. You know, remember this. Any time that they become materialistic, you see, they can be bought and sold. And that's how the Judas and the Black Messiah, that's how it actually came about. Always about money, 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 money. And we got black folks right now who will take a dime. That they don't have to give them but a dime and buy them lunch, and they'll sell you out. But talk to me about what you want to talk about, Martina.
Well, I just want to start by saying the movement, and I follow movement, Black movement, the movement against white supremacy, against injustice, against racially profiling, against poverty, against discrimination based on my beliefs. I support and follow like-minded groups, individuals, various platforms. I noticed that the oppositions have been keeping a close eye on us, and they are pushing the envelope against us without provocation, in order to get us in sticky situations, because they assume we are inferior and vulnerable at the time of such attacks. Also, be aware of fake license plates while out and about if you suspect of someone that may be following you. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Montana. And always be aware, especially you as a woman, a young woman, my suggestion to you, look around your surroundings. Look around your surroundings. Know where you at all times, you know, because remember, they don't care nothing about us. So we got to make sure that we're doing what we need to do to take care of ourselves and stay focused and do what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, absolutely, young lady. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, if anything you want to add, go right ahead.
Racism is being televised, not the revolution. They are watching us closely from every angle and wondering what we're up to and if we are playing a revolt. They are afraid we will do to them what their forefathers did to our ancestors and what they today still display, hatred for Black Americans.
Mm, absolutely. You know, and I agree with you 100%. They're afraid that, you know, we might become empowered and do what they did, not only what their forefathers did, but what they're doing to us today. That's what they're afraid of. They're actually afraid of us because they think all the rotten things they have done to us, that we might figure out a way to reverse this thing and put it on them and give them the same treatment they have given up. They don't want that, and that's why they're fighting. That's why you have a Trump. That's why you have a Cruz and a Holly and all these people, because they're determined, you know. And remember this, the minority will become the majority in about 20, 25 years, and they're concerned about that. So we have to stay focused and do what we need to do. Go right ahead.
Okay, regarding the BLM movement, I'm just to the allies or want to be allies. Don't just be allies, be all in. Don't just move the crowd with sighs and sounds. Move your people toward righteousness and against racism.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely,
point.
Absolutely. I agree 100%, you know, and we just have to get out here, do what we need to do, so you know what it is. Right on, right on. But listen, I'm going to bring your mom in. Mm-hmm.
Regarding housing, MHSDA, Michigan State Housing Development Authority,
mm-hmm.
specifically, China and Associates, okay, SJNADA or some an association.
Mm-hmm.
They practice bigotry in Macomb County and against Blacks. So, yeah, and I had a hearing, but you know, one thing about that, they already know the decision before the hearing. They'll tell you and let you say everything that you're in is. Have your evidence, but they already have their decision already. Mine is made up. And most
Absolutely.
Of the time it's not in your favor.
Oh, for sure.
So.
But, you know, Marcina, here's the thing. I believe in strength in numbers. I believe that. I believe that when you fight, you can't fight alone. I think that, you know, even people who really don't have intention or reason to be with you in court, if you bring them in, and show them that, you know, they're watching. And here's the key. While you in court, always have somebody with a pencil and a piece of paper writing down, even if they just doodling, it don't make a difference. Just have them writing, because that's when they get concerned. Because they know that most of the time Black folks is not going to do nothing. All we're going to do is talk, they figure. All we're going to talk, and we're going to talk to each other. You know, and then most of the time they're not for you no way. So we got to figure out a way what we're going to do. Remember this, there's always strength in numbers. And when you fight, don't try to fight alone. You see, take a group in there with y'all. And all everybody with a pencil and a piece of paper, just start writing. And that'll scare their butts to death. Because they're very concerned about that. So we got to be aware of that. Right on. So do you, what else you want? You got anything else you want to tell me about that?
Well, if anybody has any information about how to fight against bigotry in the housing and who I can report it to besides civil rights, can
right.
they get to just send the information to Reverend Pinckney, and he'll relay it back to me. And in closing, I would like to, I come from a family of activists,
mm-hmm.
I don't think I should back down now. I'm going to continue to observe because it's my obligation to my ancestors and mine and my family well-being now and for years to come. Well, thank you so much, Reverend Pinckney, for adding me on.
Oh, well, thank you, Marcina Jr. I'm overly impressed. So, look, we need to talk and figure out a way how we're going to strategize because everything got to be done with strategy. You know, we're dealing with a monster. You know, when they first came out with Rodan and Godzilla, TV, they didn't know how to kill them. Then they figure out a way to kill them. So we got to figure out a way how we're going to kill this Godzilla and this Rodan. That's what I call it. Absolutely. Well, listen, let's talk soon. Maybe we'll get some more information from you next week. We definitely enjoy you. And it's going to be heard by a lot of people. People are going to be willing to listen. And maybe we get a little feedback, too. If I do get something, I'll let you know.
Thank you so much.
All right, then. That was Marcina Jr. there. Now let's hear from Marcina Jr. Senior. Because I know she got something to say. Marcina Senior, talk to me. Hey.
How you doing today?
I'm doing great. What about yourself?
I'm hanging in there. You know, I got to move with the wind in the right direction, not the wrong direction. There's a lot of
mm-hmm.
stuff going on in this country, and it affecting us all, mentally and physically. But I just want to give an update about the coronavirus, COVID-19.
Uh-huh.
A lot of folks around here across the country thinking that we can go out and play and go to bars and drink and be merry, not wear a mask. You know, so across this country, particularly in Texas, they're saying, okay, you can go maskless, according to the governor, Governor Abbott, and many people some of the politicians in Texas, millions of folks in Texas are opposing him saying it will not be no mandate, you know, everything's okay, you know, free for all and be maskless. You don't have to adhere to 6 feet, 6 feet distance, social distancing. So you can imagine the escalation of COVID-19. We're trying to have it under control, not out of control. So when you got some of these Republican governors across the nation and saying everything's okay, they really echoing what the former president, their president, Donald Trump, was saying. And then the White House, all of them had gotten COVID-19, which
mm-hmm.
we're trying to heal. We're not trying to kill. So, you know, the numbers are going up and sometimes going down. And I just want to say globally, we must understand that nobody is safe until everybody is safe. That's not my quote. This is a world quote. This is a world issue, a global pandemic. We think about just the United States, but it's global. We know where it started from and how it ended up. You know, so, you know, when Wuhan, China, but all over this country affected in the United States, and globally and continents across the world has been affected by COVID-19, and the death was insurmountable. So we're dealing with this. We got vaccines out here. But let me just say this. Globally, 117 million cases and over 2 million deaths globally. You know, and so in United States was over 584 584,000 as far as Michigan, as far as the total cases. Mm-hmm. And so we dealt with that. We dealt with them. We dealt with 29 million in the United States, 524,000 deaths. And so in order to have it under control, we can't just relax in these various states, say, okay, you can do, you know, business as usual. There is no normalcy. We can't go back to normal. It won't be another normal, when it comes down to COVID-19, because right now we're dealing with variants that's from South Africa, the UK, in Britain, so various variants, and some of them have mutated. So that's going to be a new strain of COVID-19. And these vaccines that's been distributed across this country, that those vaccines, like Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna, those are already in place. Johnson & Johnson, they'll be rolling away and having millions maybe by June or July. They only have a small quantity right now, and that's only one dosage for Johnson & Johnson. And I was told that's not as effective as Pfizer and Moderna. That's in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, in the United States, it's one of the richest countries across the globe. So what's happening is over 130 countries won't be seeing any vaccines in their countries, because the United States, because they got all the money, the billions of dollars to pay for all this, they're not going to see any vaccines in their country until the United States vaccinate majority of the people across the country, including the 20-year-olds. So various countries across the world won't even see any vaccines come to their country until probably 2023. People understand with these poor countries, they're not getting the vaccine, and then when the distribution come, how are they going to get it there? They dealt with a lot of these countries don't have electric grids, okay, no electricity. So that means some of these to the vaccines, the Pfizer and Moderna, it has to be refrigerated. These people don't have no refrigeration. So what they have is AstraZeneca, which I heard is not very effective, but it doesn't require a freezer temperature. So nevertheless, so it's a struggle about if they get the vaccines, how are they going to get to the place? Are they going to have a donkey? Are they going to be on a bike? Are they going to walk? It's not like driving a car in America. America is being selfish. It's people out here that need it most across the world, and we're just throwing, you know, like, okay, forget them, you know, we're going every man for themselves in our country alone. But if you know, remember, nobody is safe until everyone is safe. So you got countries that's not safe, and they have these variants, and it's still killing folks. And the United States figure they better because they got a vaccine, but keep in mind those variants that came from various countries. That vaccine that they currently are giving people here in this in the United States might not, with the new variant, that vaccine that person is taking, like Pfizer, might not do anything for that person who had gotten the shot, because the variant might not if it comes in the system of an individual and they got the new vaccine, they still can get COVID-19 because that new vaccine is not it's not doing anything as far as the antibiotics is not helping. That variant going past all that, you're still going to get sick of COVID-19. So they really don't know, because they rush to make these different pharmaceutical companies are making these different vaccines out here and to distribute across the country, but then worldly. You got other vaccines other than the ones I mentioned that might not be as efficient as the ones, the main two, the Pfizer and Moderna. Johnson & Johnson's only one dose but I heard it's not, you know, it's not as successful rate as the other two that I had mentioned. So anyway, it's still trial by error. It's better than nothing. Yes, it's lower in the hospitalizations, but when you go to the hospital sick with COVID, they're going to turn you down anyway, then you're going to die at home. So we already know a lot of black folks died because of the ventilators they were put on, or they were sent home. The hospitals didn't give a darn about them. So they were just left out in the cold and dead. So now we do have a somewhat fight because we have vaccination, but we must understand, once again, it's a world issue. We must be concerned about everybody across the globe, the continents and the various countries. Colombia, we can go El Salvador, we can go all over places, you know, in South Africa, a number of other places that's affected our people of color. The poor people, it's the poor nations that's really being affected the most. The rich nations can supply the vaccines, whoever wants one. But I just want to say this, Reverend Pinkney, because I know I'm running out of time, but what's disturbing to me is that people are getting really lax. They think because they've gotten the vaccine, I'm seeing on social media, I got my first, and I'm getting my second one in a few weeks, blah, blah, this. I don't have to wear a mask. And where did you get that from? So I had to clarify some of these people with this misinformation out here. First of all, getting the vaccine, and I just say it more than once, getting the vaccine, you still have to wear a mask. You still got to wash your hands. If you're inside, you have to have some ventilation in your own home. Beware of outdoor gatherings. It still can spread because they don't know. They, meaning the scientists, the pharmaceutical companies, they don't know when it comes down to what these vaccines would actually, how strong they are, you know, when it comes down to protecting the individual, because they made them so quickly. Because normally it takes years to come up with a vaccine, but they're rushing because they've been killing people across the world. So, you know,
there you go.
We got thousands and thousands of people have been killed here in the United States. And then we got millions across the world. So they didn't take their time because it was, now we got this other stuff going on. So it's mutating, and so we really... we got to be vigilant and still do our part. You know, I wear a mask and a shield. I've had one dose of Moderna. I had no side effects whatsoever. I didn't even feel the needle going in. The second one will be coming in a few weeks on the 24th of March. But I decided to do that because when we're sharing homes and, you know, I'm an older individual and you have somebody that you're sharing a home with other family members younger, and they're going out the body thinking, you know, they can go to the store, go to their friend's house, come back to a person that, you know, their immune system is not as great as the young folks is, and they think it's okay. That's when I decide, okay, my mindset is different. I'm going to get this vaccination because I'd rather get that than be on a ventilator and die. I'll take my chance with the vaccine shot. But, yeah, so I just wanted to update you and you know, make it quick and short, but, you know, it's a whole lot of information about this, and, you know, and so in the state of Michigan, yeah, they got the different restaurants opening with a small capacity, but they're going to raise that up. They got the theaters open and all that stuff. That's on them, but I'm not trying to be mixed up with a whole bunch of folks right now. The vaccine ain't going to stop nothing when it come down to spreading. Maybe the symptoms might be milder than, you know, normally with people who didn't get vaccinated. I don't know. It's a trial and error. And then but what I can see, Reverend Pinkney, people are going to get inoculated next year or so with a different a vaccine because the new variant is already here in the United States. This vaccine that they're giving to people now in this country might not be effective with the variant.
That's right. Amen.
The current,
all right.
Very strange of it, yeah, of the COVID-19.
All right. Well, listen, we'll talk more next week.
Yeah, okay then. Well, thanks a lot.
All right then. Take care now.
Okay.
That was my good friend, Marcina Sr. Yeah, she was right there. And let me bring in my friend Lee. And one of the reasons why Lee is important, I was reading in the newspaper about a police officer who hired an informant to kill two people for money. A police officer did this. And all this stuff that Lee is talking about, which is important, and see, a lot of people don't quite understand when they talk about police officers killing people, working with people that kills people. Most time, people, they don't believe it, because a lot of time black folks don't believe that until it happened to them. And then once it happened to them, it's too late. But they don't believe stuff like this, planting drugs on someone. Well, we know here in the city of Benton Harbor, there was a police officer planting drugs on over 300 people. And eventually he was caught because he beat up a white guy. He beat up a white guy in St. Joe, and by beating up that white guy in St. Joe, sent his butt to prison. But that's just the way it is. Let me bring in my good friend Lee. Talk to me.
Hey, how you doing, Reverend Pink?
Man, I'm doing great, man. Good to hear your voice.
Yes. Yeah,
you know what you've been saying all this time? They had an article in the newspaper. I don't know. I can't remember what city it was. About this police officer and his informant. He had his informant to kill two people, a lady and a man. They didn't know each other, the lady and the two people he killed. But he was paid. His informant was actually paid something like $5,000 to kill both of them. And but only thing, the second time, the guy got caught. He got, when he killed the lady, he got caught, and he spilled the beans on the police officer. And first they didn't believe him, because it took him almost a year to arrest the police officer. Wow.
No, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that happens a lot in Detroit, and it's been going on for many years. You know, and one of the things is you can't, if you bring the issue forward, the thing is they're going to say, guy's an informant. So what you're saying, it ain't going to stand. Even if there's hardcore evidence, you know, it takes, like, the one guy that's on my case, here it is, they've been letting him continue to kill people, continue to rob and do all the things that he was doing as long as he kept setting people up. Well, now he ended up getting caught killing the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's locked up for first-degree murder and got like five counts of he got several murder charges and like five counts of felony firearm, and he got a whole heap of charges on
him. Felony with a firearm and all this kind of stuff. Those are five years.
Well, see, when they went and got him, they found other guns as well. And they found, you know, multiple guns. So a lot of times everybody, you know, they was like, how is it that he kept getting away with it? I say, well, of course. I mean, you know, the guy's an informant, but I'm going to let you know, yeah, he did kill your family member. So it was like the best thing I could have did was like, hey, look, I'm going to let you know what happened with your family member. That guy's working with the police, and this is what happened to your family. They brag about it because they know that they have the same immunity that the police has. But it took him for them to ignore everything he's been doing, and now he get caught on camera. But the situation with Keenan Beard, he was killed at an elementary school on school grounds after he dropped his son off. You know, they orchestrated that murder. But see, what people don't realize is Keenan Beard was under investigation
because
of another murder, and that person had ties, family members. One was a Detroit police officer, and one was a Wayne County sheriff.
Mm.
So when his murder took place, the next guy who orchestrated with that, they felt, oh, he's going to tell. That's when I sent you the video right after his murder, Keenan Beard's murder, ended up finding that guy in the trunk dead in Southwest Detroit.
Wow.
But this has been going on for years like this.
Yeah, I know.
This is just something right at the front door. It's like, I've been telling people this a lot of people now is starting to come to me like, you always been telling us this. Like, I know y'all always thought I was crazy. Everybody thought I was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But now that it's all coming out, it's like, dude, you've been telling us this for over 2-3 years. That's like, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, they say you ain't so crazy, huh?
Yeah, now they say that I ain't so crazy. They listening to everything I'm saying now.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it could have been, a lot of this could have been prevented a long time ago. But, you know, going back even before this guy, I mean, we can go back to the 90s.
Uh-huh.
Where they done covered up murders for this guy. The thing is, Detroit, it was on YouTube, and it's called Detroit Homicide.
Mm.
And one of the murders that they're covering up is on that show. And they got him at 1300 Bobian and everything, but they walked scot-free on it. That was a drive-by shooting.
Mm.
That they covered up. And they're still covering it up to this day, playing it as if that never existed.
Well, that's what they do. You know, they cover up for each other.
Well, yeah, because the thing is with this is crossing multiple agencies. See, when you have Detroit police and the cousin to the Detroit police is a Wayne County sheriff, and then they working with the Michigan State Police. So when you got those multiple agencies working together and covering up murders, of course it's going to be covered up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who are you going to go to?
Yeah.
You know, but one thing I did send a letter to the senator.
Mm-hmm.
I reached out to the senator, like, how is it that you can allow this to go on?
Yeah,
I reached out to Kim Worthy, Wayne County Prosecutor. How can you allow this to go on? So it ain't like they didn't know what was going on with him before this current murder. But as long as he kept providing with information and everything, I guess information is more important than a human life.
No, for sure. Ain't no question about that. That's a black light.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at Kenyell Brown. Kenyell Brown, these was the same people that was associated with him. Just so happened that came out in the media, federal informant, 6 murders. But you notice they don't even talk about it no more.
No, absolutely not.
That was just in 2020.
Yeah.
They don't even talk about that no more. The federal informant. But see, I think the only reason that they really went after him is because the one girl that did get killed, her mother was a retired police sergeant. So now it's like, okay, now we need to get on it. But what they... not going to be in with the fact that it was 2 people in the same fashion that this same informant killed the other guy, which is Christian Moore. Same exact orchestration And like I say, this has been going on for many, many years. They kill, the informants are killed, and then they'll find somebody that they don't like in the street or have an issue with the informants, and guess what? This body is yours.
Yeah.
And we're going to have this informant testify on you because, of course, the informant going to be considered a credible witness. Why? Because he's the one who actually did it. So he's
right.
going to be able to say,
absolutely.
Yeah, I've seen him this way.
I've
seen
exactly
how
it happened. Happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he knew exactly how it happened.
Exactly how it happened.
So to a jury, they would be like, oh, man, this informant really knows what he's talking about.
Right.
Well, he knows what he's talking about because he's the one that did it.
Absolutely. 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 Hey, right on, my brother. But listen, I got to let you go.
All righty.
Listen, we'll talk soon.
Yes, sir.
All right. That's my good friend Lee. I'll see y'all next week, same time, same station.